Welcome to the fourth White House Science Fair. I'm Kristen Dorgolo, and I'm so excited to be here with Bill Nye, the science guy, and Carrie Byron, host of MythBusters and Science Channel's Head Rush. It's going to be a fantastic live webcast today. We're here at the Science Fair, and if you don't know, the Science Fair is an annual celebration of students that are excelling in science, technology, engineering, and math, otherwise known as STEM. The kids here today are 100 students that have won. They're from more than 30 states, and they're winners of 40 different science and technology competitions. And we're going to get to meet some of those here today and talk about new steps in the president's Educate to Innovate campaign, trying to get more kids into STEM. So why don't we meet our first kids, Bill and Carrie? What do you think?
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Who's up first?
Oh, yeah, Rocket Girls.
This is the Rocket Girls, yes.
Woo.
In red, 850 feet.
825.
825 feet in English units.
Wait, first off, what are your names?
Oh, I'm Rebecca Chapin.
I'm Jasmine Logan.
I'm Niamani Robinson.
And where do you come from?
We are all from Maryland, actually. So.
Actually from actual Maryland.
Pretty
capital,
close. Didn't have too far to come.
Yeah, not a big commute, luckily, though. So.
Where in Maryland?
We're from Largo, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. And I'm from Crofton area.
So. And so tell us about your project.
Okay. Want me to go? All right.
No, you. No, really.
So I guess we are all representing the Team America Rocketry Challenge, which is a really, really cool program. So we build and launch rockets. That's our main thing, which is probably one of the coolest things a kid could do. So we have three major parameters for our challenge. We have a height one, a time one, and a payload. So we have to successfully deliver two eggs unbroken up to the air and to the ground. It has to be hitting exactly 825 feet and between 48 and 50 seconds. And if you go over or under any of those parameters, you get points added, which is a negative.
So were you successful in delivering the eggs without a crack?
Most of the time we were. Like a couple of times when we were taking it out, it cracked, but most of the time after it launched and came back, the egg was fine.
But then some clumsy ground crew. We got to work on that.
That's
but
right.
So you guys hit 825 feet exactly?
Some of the time, most of the time we got close and we hit it a couple of times, but sometimes it was too high.
What made it go too high?
Well, it could be we need to add more weight, could make it go like. If it's too light, it'll go too high. Or if we use a motor that's like stronger than we need, then it'll go too high.
Because you can't vary the motor much, right? You got to pick a motor.
Right. Yes.
The word motor, we used to call it explosive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys were working with E-class motors, right?
Yes.
So they get more powerful the lower you get into the alphabet.
The higher.
Yeah.
Higher, lower. I guess it depends on how you buzz. Laid out the alphabet, yeah.
So future career at NASA, SpaceX, what do you guys want to do with your lives?
Well, I like the medical field, but the engineering part of the medical field, so it sounds
like medical devices.
Yes.
Mic guys.
Oh, yep. Yeah, I guess I'm probably going into biological engineering, actually, which like doesn't involve rockets. Maybe I'll have like rocket-propelled prosthetics, but maybe physics, too. So.
But it's all going to be fluid mechanics, Bill predicts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the flow of things that take the shape of their container. You were going to say something. Is it Nina?
Nia.
I'm
not nearly as decided as them in my career, but I like science, obviously. I like architecture. I like chemistry. So, you know.
We'll find our way.
I want to know what got you guys into rockets. Was there a program you got you into this?
Yes. NSBE, the National Society of Black Engineers, introduced us to TARC. And they actually had multiple programs, but TARC seemed the most interesting because, you know, you're
going
outside.
What is TARC's an acronym?
Yes, Team America Rocketry Challenge. Okay. So that seemed the most interesting because you get to go out and fly rockets, which is altogether fun.
Was there any, did you have a mentor or anyone who sparked this for you?
Yes, we actually had two mentors, Miss Camille and Mr. Kevin, and they helped us with our competition and how to set stuff up until we didn't, like, blow anything up.
They were really great help to us overall, you know, throughout the competition. And we really appreciate what they did for us and, you know, dedicating their time.
Well, it was so great to meet you guys. Thank you for coming to the White House today. And I hope you enjoy getting to meet everybody, and especially Bill and Carrie. Aren't they great?
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. And I hope the president gets to meet you.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah. So long.
And it is rocket science.
It is rocket science.
Carrie, have you built a rocket before?
I've built lots of rockets before. I host a show for Science Channel called Large and Dangerous Rocket Ships, and they have welcomed me into the fold and helped me build a couple rockets.
Awesome. I've gotten to play with lunar landers. What about you?
I built a lot of rockets and flown them.
All right, so I think we've got our next student.
Ten flights. That's a good
Parker,
a good
am I right? Is this Parker?
It is Parker.
Parker, greetings.
Hello.
And so, FIRST.
Yeah, FIRST Robotics. They got me into most of this. So pretty happy about it.
You did well?
I didn't do the competition. I actually won a side competition called the FIRST Future Innovators Award. And it was a patentable invention for use in the real world. So what I did was I made a prosthetic limb out of a bicycle, a single bicycle. So
you cut the bicycle up?
Oh, I cut the bicycle up, definitely. Yeah. Cut the bicycle up, had a torch, hammering on the ground. Looked ridiculous probably for 3 hours there. Mm. But the
bicycle is hard to ride now.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Doesn't have any wheels.
Yeah.
Unless you have an amputee, and then it'd be, I guess you can call that riding it.
Wait, so you took apart a bicycle and you made prosthetics?
I made a prosthetic limb.
Wow.
What does the prosthetic do? Which limb?
A prosthetic leg.
Oh, leg. Leg.
Yes.
So. And is it here today? It must be.
It is. It's right over there with that display that we barely got into the White
And
House.
So how did you apply? What made you want to apply for this particular award within the FIRST family of work? Family. That's a hilarious gag here. Yes.
I actually was told by my mentor that you need to enter this thing. It just sort of happened at happenstance. I actually made it before this. I even knew about this award. A friend of my dad's came to me. He goes to Honduras every year. And he said, there's a real problem with amputees there. And I said, what's the problem, Greg? He said, they have tainted water. And they don't understand that, you know, clear water, it may look clear and it may look like it's drinkable, but you got to put it through a filter. They don't understand that part, so they drink it anyway. And the primary, so they get infected. And the primary treatment for infection is amputation. And so, really, they had a massive number of amputees in Honduras. And so, at that point, I said, okay, I got to fix this problem. It needs to be fixed. I'd never been to a third world country, but I watch a lot of Netflix. And I watch a lot of documentaries on third world countries on Netflix. And I noticed a lot of bicycles in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I bet there's a lot of bicycle waste. And after going to Honduras, there is definitely a lot of hot bicycle
beat
waste.
Up bicycles, they just throw them away.
They just throw them away. If they don't know how to fix them, they throw them away. So at that point, the goal was, can I make a prosthetic limb out of a bicycle? And I said, yes, I can. So 3 hours later, I put together this thing. Like I said, I was hammering on the floor. It looked ridiculous, but it happened.
That's not ridiculous. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
So I finally made it, entered the competition. I had no idea how many kids entered this competition. Just said, hey, I'll try this. Patent the thing. I couldn't patent the prosthetic because prosthetics and bicycles together, not very patentable, but I did patent the process to make a cycle leg.
Okay, so now you have a blueprint that you can actually send along so somebody in a third world country can take that blueprint and create a prosthetic for themselves?
Yes, it's sort of a procedure, not necessarily a blueprint, but we're actually a lot further past that.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle leg was just a barrier of entry for me. That wasn't the problem. From first glance, that is the problem, the cost of prosthetics, the mechanics of it all. But there's 22 countries in our nation that makes prosthetic mechanics, but nobody makes the prosthetic boot. So back there, and I'm sure you guys won't be able to come to my booth, the problem with the boot is it's $300 in material, but after the processes and all the skills needed and the tooling, it's $7,000.
Yeah, it's a lot of messing around, yeah.
Because that's the most important part. And so we've developed, me and my prosthetist friend, we developed the first universal prosthetic boot. Small, medium, and large can fit 99.9% of all the prosthetic amputee population around the world. So we're pretty happy about that, knowing that a little over 5% of amputees are in the U.S. alone. The majority of those are in
around the world.
Nations.
Yeah.
Right. That can make a real difference.
Thank you.
Well, Parker, it's great to meet you.
Yeah, microphone.
Yeah, I hope you have a great stay at the White House. You're out here in the heat, so stay cool and enjoy the hot D.C. weather. I think we're gonna meet our next students.
All right.
Thanks, Parker.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
So one of the things we heard from Parker was how important STEM mentors were for him, and I think it's so exciting that we're announcing today new commitments associated with expanding the number of STEM mentors in the country so that more kids have an adult in their lives who are actually able to help them with their STEM interests. So I love hearing those stories of the people who made a difference.
And the mentors really help them connect the dots at how they can actually help.
Well, and also it saves a lot of time. You know, I've tried that.
right,
what you
right.
Might do,
don't repeat
you
those what mistakes
you
of the past.
Yeah, it's just a huge, because when you can get discouraged when you make a mistake somebody else has already made. And so that's what you have a mentor for.
Right.
Yeah, let's get more of them.
Yes.
All right, let's meet our next student.
Greetings, greetings.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
Here you go.
Hello.
All three of us.
Oh,
no,
oh wow. Okay. What's your name?
I'm Anne Merrill.
And what's your project?
I was using this thing called biochar.
We love biochar.
Sure. Oh, good. You know what it is. That's awesome.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, after a fashion.
Yeah. And earthworms to suppress soil-borne pathogens.
Mm-hmm. So give me a pathogen that you suppressed.
The main one I used was a fungus called Fusarium oxysporum.
What?
It causes It causes vascular wilts in tomato plants. So it's really
Kills the tomato plants.
Yeah.
The stem loses its rigidity.
The vascular system is kind of like the circulatory system in humans.
Yeah.
So without your blood, you're not doing so great. Mm. And
one thing you want in a tomato is to have water inside.
Definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nice. Yeah. Important.
So how did you make your biochar?
I actually got it from a few different places. I used one naturally produced biochar. I'm from Connecticut, and it was from
biochar.com.
Forest fire.
No, I made that up.
In the 1970s.
I see. Oh, you went into the forest where there had been a forest fire.
And harvested.
Harvested.
I got it from someone who had already collected it, but yeah. And then
so,
another.
Hang on. Just let me get. It's charcoal, right?
It's a charcoal-like material. Yeah.
Yeah, so you cook it where it doesn't get enough oxygen, so it pushes all the water out.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Really high temperatures, no oxygen.
No, or low oxygen.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's got to be some for combustion. Yeah,
but it's not like a burning process.
Yeah.
Right.
So you harvested some. Did you make your own?
I didn't. I'm working on that right now as a side project. But one of the biochars I used was a bunch of students at Yale who made biochar in their garage.
They were making it intentionally be biochar? Or?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
Setting a couch on fire and pushing
exactly.
it out in the
college,
street.
Right? You never really know. But biochar, it's any kind of organic material. So I think they just took a bunch of plants and burned it. I don't know.
Burned it in the right conditions.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
So what happened when you mixed the biochar with the soil, I take it?
I put it on the top of soil. And I had the earthworms integrate it.
The word integrate means?
Bioturbate, like mix it together.
They did their earthworm thing.
They did their earthworm thing.
Yeah. Chewing their way through dirt, eating dirt. They took biochar down with them.
Yep.
And then their castings, which is a nice word
for
the tailpipe.
What comes out the back end of
did something to help the plants. How did you have plants growing with and without like controls?
Yeah, I had a bunch of controls. I used three different types of biochar for that part of the experiment.
Which one was best?
Well, it varied a little bit. The Connecticut charcoal, which is this one, was really successful.
That's from the forest fire?
Yes.
What about the...
best energies?
I'm looking for a word for college students who may not... How would the college student one do?
It didn't even make it into the first round.
Oh, no.
I know, it was rough. I started with 7 biochars, and I narrowed it down to 3 based on what the earthworms were responding to.
How did you come up with this idea?
Yeah, I was going to say.
It was kind of a long process. I had done some plant projects in the past, and I wanted to branch out a little bit, and I thought earthworms would be fun. And then I was reading about different types of soil amendments, and I came across biochar.
Where do you go to read about it? Online? Or do you go to gardening stores? Or
I actually went to a few gardens, and asked around. A lot of internet. I'm a fan of the internet.
Oh, who really? Isn't?
The kids with the electric computer machines.
Yeah, that technology thing. It's fun. Since the time when I started the project, the biochar industry has expanded a lot. But when I first started, there wasn't a lot about biochar.
When did you start? A year ago? 2 years ago?
2 years ago. I did it.
So it's growing that fast?
Yeah.
Or burning that fast?
It's taking off. It's really exciting. Mm-hmm.
Is this a field you want to go into?
Definitely, yeah. I'm going to Cornell next year to study environmental.
Yes. Congratulations.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Go Big Red. Go Big Red.
Yeah.
So you're going to go to the ag school, agriculture school.
I'm actually school. Arts and sciences.
Arts and sciences, that's great.
But I'm hoping to study environmental science. Right. There's a lot of really cool biochar research going on there.
Yeah.
Well, it was great to meet you.
Good luck at Cornell.
Thank you so much.
Don't forget your char of bio.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be miserable.
Thank you. You get it back. To save time.
Thank you. It's lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Your microphone.
You did a good job balancing the microphone with the biochar. That's a tough juggling act. So we're going to be also talking today about a new $35 million Department of Education commitment that is going to expand opportunities in STEM and training for STEM educators. So we're going to get more great science and technology teachers into the classrooms. We're excited about that.
You're fantastic.
I know. And so I think we're going to hear from these kids who are waiting.
Before we do that, can I just ask you now, why do you think it's a good use, $35 million?
Yeah, you know.
It doesn't go as far as it used to.
You know that the president.
Well, why are we spending $35 million?
This is a great question. So the president has set a 100,000 goal for 100,000 STEM teachers to be added to classrooms in the next 10 years. We really have a shortage of all the teachers we need who are excellent at teaching science and technology. And so this investment is going to go into creating and helping teachers who want to be better in how they teach science
and
technology.
So why is it important to have science education, science and math education?
Well, you know, our commitment to STEM.
This is all my idea. I didn't make her do this.
Well, Bill, I think you agree that science and technology education is so important so that our students and youth are prepared for the jobs and industries of the future, and America can grow in terms of how we create jobs, jobs, and jobs.
Yes.
I think I'm quoting you from last year, Bill.
I think you might be. It's just my claim is that science education is what allows us to innovate, and innovation is what that's what the United States exports now.
Absolutely.
Is the new ideas.
And problem solving.
Well, problem solving, yes. So engineering is using science to solve problems and make things. And so through science and engineering education, we will innovate and continue to lead the world in new ideas and making doing more with less and change the world for the betterment of humankind. Hello.
Bill's right.
Who
Hello.
Are you? Who are you?
Welcome. Who are you?
I'm Kavita Selva from Houston, Texas.
Here, hold that.
Okay.
Bill and I will share.
We'll share.
Okay.
Here you go.
So what was your project?
So here's some background. So rare earth materials make up permanent magnets. And these permanent magnets make up things such as wind turbine generators.
Name me a rare earth.
Neodymium.
Neodymium.
Yeah. And so these rare earth materials make up permanent magnets. And these permanent magnets make up things such as wind turbine generators and motors in electric cars. And recently there has been a problem with the availability of these rare earth materials, which is driving the prices skyrocketing, right? It's insane. So
problem because they have to come out of mines.
Yeah.
And
these mines,
they're rare,
hence the expression.
So,
no, I'm not kidding.
So, yeah. So, it's like 98% of these rare earths are found in China, and they've recently restricted their exports. So, that's why the availability is.
Exerting their economic muscle.
Yeah.
So, now there's like a worldwide incentive to develop new kinds of magnets that don't use as much rare earth in them. So
this is what you've done.
Yeah. So, I basically use these things called superconductor tapes. And these tapes contain a very small amount of rare earth in them. And when they are penetrated by a magnetic field and kept at a cool temperature, nanoscale defects inside the tape will actually trap the magnetic field inside the tape and make the tape act as a magnet at that cool temperature.
Is it liquid nitrogen kind of temperature?
Yeah. And so these tapes, since these tapes contain such a small amount of rare earth in them, if we can use them to trap high and uniform magnetic fields, we can definitely use them to replace the permanent magnets in these clean energy applications.
So you have liquid nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
This crazy tape. Where do I get the tape?
So I live in Houston, Texas. So I got mine from the University of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
But
did
right
they
now,
know?
They're
well, they're going to know now.
Well,
is that something you can get easily?
Yeah, you can't buy them. I don't think so. But
not yet?
Not yet.
So do you wrap the tape around some ferrous, some iron-bearing thing or something?
Go ahead. I have these tapes, and I just like, I cut them. I wish I could show you, but I cut them.
We'll look at them later.
Yeah, I cut them into
Go online, everybody, and check out the Are they superconducting?
Yeah,
not quite. Yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So I cut them into 35 millimeter segments, and I basically pack them 3x3 in a crisscross arrangement into a little sample holder. And I basically, that's how I have my trap field magnets.
So you're into physics.
Yeah.
And you worked out the best angle to put these things to...
So I basically had two different configurations. I had a crisscross arrangement, which was three vertical, three horizontal, three vertical, three horizontal. And then I had a straight arrangement, which was just three vertical, three vertical, three vertical. And later I found out that the crisscross arrangement traps the most uniform magnetic field. So it would probably be better to use in the practical applications.
Did you have anyone who was a mentor for you that inspired this project?
So I had three mentors. I had Dr. Gram Makjik and Dr. Xiaofen Li from the University of Houston basically taught me how to use equipment in the lab. Don't break anything. Don't, you know, freeze off my hand with liquid nitrogen. And then, yeah. And then I also had another mentor named Dr. Masson, Professor Masson. And he basically, later I did this year, I did an experiment on simulation. I'm simulating the trap field. Mm-hmm. And so he taught me how to use the software.
Oh, there's software, yeah. So you got lines of force and all these wonderful things.
Yeah.
You always been into magnets, or how did you come onto this project?
Yeah, so basically I learned about superconductors through MRIs. They use a low-temperature superconductors in the MRIs, right? And I later learned that we can actually trap magnetic fields in these tapes, and they contain a very small amount of our Earth. And I was reading a National Geographic article one day about how we are in need of new types of magnets that don't use as much rare earth in them, and I just put two and two together.
That was your aha moment right there. That's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's so good to meet you.
It's great to meet you because
we've got a couple more students coming
up. What you're working
here.
On is, to me, the key to the future. It's not to do less. It's to do more with less. So great job. Is that Bo?
That's Bo. Bo
is working. Below the frame of camera.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Yes.
It's nice to meet you.
Carry on. Nicely done.
All right, we're going to meet a few more guests.
Oh, here we go. Greetings,
guys.
Hi.
Well,
Bo, the presidential dog, just walked by. We're going to say hello.
Hey, can you two change places so you go tall to, cool. Thank you.
And come on forward a little bit.
Yeah. She bites.
I do.
I don't bite.
So tell us your name.
I'm scared now. What are you doing?
What's your name?
Neil.
Neil.
Sierra.
Sierra.
Alora.
Hi, welcome, guys.
What is your project?
Safety system. It is a panel of motion sensors that is designed to fit under the back seat of the car under the cushion.
Under the cushion, the back seat of the car. And what does this do for us?
It helps us from the children not to die in the hot cars because
in hot cars.
Here, could you turn around so the camera can see
you?
Your mom's gonna want to see you on TV.
Mm-hmm. And you look fabulous.
Come on forward.
You can come a little closer.
You guys all look so nice.
So what happens in the hot car?
Hot car. Kids in the back of the hot car. Bad thing.
The panel's under the back seat of the car, and it detects weight and motion, and the car reaches 100 degrees. It will, sound an alarm. The windows will roll down. The lights will flash, and it will contact the EMS and police.
That is amazing.
How did you come up with this idea, guys?
Me and Sierra had an inspiration. My inspiration was that one day when I was going to the Oklahoma State Capitol, I saw a dog left in a hot car, and it made me really sad. So I wanted to do something about it. And I just saw, a news story, and it was about a human dying in a hot car because the car was locked from the inside, and it was getting really hot, and I thought I had to do something about it.
So this can help the lives of children and of animals.
We have some statistics about it, and we have pretty much three. Since 1998, there have been 603 deaths.
603 deaths? That's a lot. In a hot car.
In hot cars, huh?
Yes. And 73% of those deaths were children under the age of 2.
Ugh.
Oh, man. Miserable.
So good that you guys worked on this project to help prevent that.
How old are you guys? Do you know?
8 and 7.
8 and 7.
I was seven.
She's 8 and I'm 8.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
High school physics teacher.
Yay!
Oh, I love you, man.
High school physics teacher.
A scientist.
A scientist. Do you know what kind?
Studies how the body moves.
And how the body moves.
The brain and stuff.
That's very cool.
MD, PhD, or a scientist.
So that you can be both.
Big goals. So what are you excited most for being at the White House today?
Meeting the president.
That's a good thing.
I hope he gets to meet you.
Sharing our idea.
Yeah. What about you?
Sharing our idea.
Oh, you guys
are
amazing.
Ideas. Come on.
Sharing ideas and meeting the president. This is a big day for you guys.
You're doing it this at 7. I can't wait to see what you're doing at 17.
I know, yeah.
They'll be back here. I have no
doubt.
They will. All right. Well, it was great to meet you. Have fun today at the White House, okay?
Carry on, you guys.
All right.
Identify the need, solve the problem, done. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Bill.
I'm Kristen.
Hi. Aaron Barron.
You can take that.
Okay.
But she's going to want it back later.
Nice to
meet you. I mean, it's
nice
just an expression.
Hi. Crystal, nice
so here,
to
let's
share.
Rotate around and look at the cameras. So, welcome to the White House Science Fair, gang. What
Thank
did you,
you,
what's your, what brought you here?
Okay, well, we are actually the 2013 national winners for Siemens We Can Change the World Challenge. And so our project is focused on alternative energy and trying to find a cost-effective but yet sustainable semiconductor material to increase the efficiency of solar cells.
Did ya?
Yes, I actually go into that. So what we were trying to use are quantum dots, which are minuscule nanocrystal materials.
What are they made of?
They're actually made of cadmium and selenide, and that's actually a big issue. And the fact that they have such carcinogenic effects on the environment, we were trying to find a suitable replacement that's not only sustainable but also cheap.
Cadmium's the yellow metal I see coating some bolts and screws, yeah.
Yes. And so what we were trying to do is actually look at carbonium sulfide and carbonium selenide replacements for nanoparticle treatment of them. And so we actually, this is a continuation research project, and so we actually determined that by altering the heat synthesis of these nanoparticles in conjunction with other materials such as titanium dioxide nanoparticles can actually increase their efficiency.
So titanium dioxide is really white, right? Really just super reflective material, right?
Yes.
Right. So you're mixing that in somehow?
Yes, we're actually able to apply those with the carbonium sulfide.
So it becomes more efficient? Or less inefficient or something?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Actually does. And so we're actually able to determine that they actually have a 48% efficiency level.
48%?
Yes.
Yes,
what was it before?
Well, most average solar panels are 15% efficient.
Yeah, I have a watch that's solar powered. It's barely 10%. No, but I'm not kidding.
No,
but that's enough for a watch.
Right.
But you got almost 5 times that?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Have you had interest
you
from,
get some
from
award
corporations
or something.
To apply this?
Well, it's definitely something that's interesting into the corporate field because, you know, quantum dots and solar cells is something that's really new into our environment because, you know, we're trying to veer away from the fossil fuels. So, you know, being that the solar cells have a low efficiency, they can't be used on quite a large scale basis, and being that they're very expensive, it's something that's really big into the research field. So hopefully with our research and more research that's going on, we can take a next step into getting more into alternative energy.
So are you guys in high school?
We actually just graduated.
Congratulations.
So
thank you.
Right on. So
where
what
going?
Are you guys
going
to do now?
Yeah. Okay, well, in the fall, I'll be attending Stanford University and study
right.
biomechanical.
Woo.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also, yeah. Nice.
You're going to Stanford next year?
No,
yeah,
California.
Yeah. Oh, I get it.
Welcome to our hood.
And I'll be attending Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, great.
And I'm studying biology.
Oh, cool.
Great. Thank you.
That's great.
It was great to meet you.
Thank
this
you. It's nice talking
to you guys. This is really cool. I'm going to come see your display.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
Your time at the White House.
Nice to meet
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Nice meeting
great
you.
To meet you.
No,
nice
it's all
meet
all
you. We're all just going to shake and trip. It's going to be great. We're having fun here at the 4th White House Science Fair. We're celebrating new commitments to getting more kids into science, technology, engineering, and math on this gorgeous day. And we've got one more set of students to meet today. All right. Welcome.
So,
hi, nice to meet you.
Hi.
Nice to meet you,
Kevin.
Nice to meet you.
My pleasure.
So, what brought you here? What a coincidence.
Yeah, so we're displaying our solar panel station, which is basically, we created it because we took a robotics class last year, and then we had to create a project that's pretty much anything we wanted. And so we were going to power, you know, a go-kart from scratch. We were going to make it from scratch and make it work. Turns out,
so hold this up a little closer. Sorry.
Yeah, okay, so turns out we were working on for throughout the whole year. You know, we were hardly working.
Is this an electric go-kart?
Yeah, yeah. We were
solar-powered electric
yes.
go-kart?
Yes. And
cool.
so like
How
a week,
cool is that?
I know.
like a week before the competition, they stole the go-kart from the school.
Wait, what?
Somebody stole
Someone
the go-kart?
Stole it from the school. And then we were like, oh my God, what are we going to do?
Somebody stole the go-kart?
That's horrible.
Yeah.
It's not like... I mean, something you're going to notice, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, this? Oh, what?
Yeah, yeah. Made myself.
So then we talked to a bunch of people, and so our soccer coach donated, like, the electric scooter that we have. And so we just worked with that. You know, the solar panel station was already created, so it was just a matter of, you know, wiring everything
together. So are there
batteries
on board? Is that what's going on?
Yes.
So basically, at the moment, we have it connected in parallel. Basically, each solar panel has 12 volts, but together they're generating 12 together. But if they were in series, they'll generate 24 with less current. And at the moment, we're just charging, like, the batteries from the scooter, like, one at a time. And also you can, like, charge, like, your phone, your laptop with the inverter we have connected. And which.
So yeah. You guys designed the inverter?
We just cooked it up. Yeah.
Well, you figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You engineered it. Yeah.
So were you getting around town on the go-kart or just playing, scooting around?
Yeah, we're just going to scoot around the White House, you know.
Well, yeah. Now we have a scooter, not a go-kart.
Burn
anymore.
Wheels into burn the White House lawn.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe Obama ride it or something.
Yeah. He likes that kind of thing. So how did you get interested in a solar-powered go-kart? Just well, what's a go? Let's go. Let's go.
Well, we're into kind of like cars, so then we were like, okay,
kind of like cars,
kind of like cars,
kind of gearheads, gearheads. Yeah.
And so we were like, oh, you know, let's create something that we can, you know, move around. You know, maybe not take the bus to school, but you know, I'm just gonna.
Yeah.
No,
you know,
I
there's
got you.
An electric car upstairs
oh, yeah.
that was
oh,
built
really?
By a student team. You should check it out.
Okay,
it's really
we'll
cool.
check it out. Okay.
I see your next step being the jetpack.
The jet.
Clearly.
Oh yeah.
No, that's a much. Excuse me. That's a much harder problem. The jetpack. Yeah. So what are you going to do next?
So, well, we're going to go to college next. We actually want to pursue something in the medical field. I want to study something with, like, kinesiology, physical therapist. And he wants to become, like,
Either a pediatrician or a general surgeon.
Yeah. But he's going to go to med school. He's going to go to med school. Of course
well,
he is.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, you guys. Congratulations.
All right,
thank you so much.
We're going to check out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this.
Gizmo.
It's
yeah,
great.
Great to see you
thank
all.
You.
So this has been really impressive. I don't know about you guys, but in high school, I didn't achieve what these students have achieved, and I'm so proud to have them here. What
the
do you guys
level
think?
Of sophistication coming from anywhere from 7 to 17 is so impressive.
Yeah, it really it is. And so I want to thank you, Carrie and Bill, for being here for
oh, no.
today's
it
live
we
webcast.
We must thank you. Oh, no.
For those of you watching along, I hope you continue watching our broadcast today. You're going to get to see amazing science projects from upstairs in the White House. President Obama will be checking out more student teams. We're also going to have two robots on stage with the president today. These are robots able to catapult large balls 9 feet in the air.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll do that on stage today, but we know they can. So thank you for joining the White House Science Fair parade desk here today. We're happy to do it. And follow along on Twitter using hashtag White House WH Science Fair. WH Science Fair on Twitter today. Thank you for following along.
Bye, guys. Thanks for watching.
Happy Science Fair Day.